Good afternoon, and welcome to Terratech's year-end 2016 financial results conference call. A replay of this call will be available at www.smallcapvoice.com. It will be archived on the investor relations section of the Terratech website. Before we begin, please let me remind you that during the course of this conference call, Terratech's management may make forward-looking statements. These forward-looking statements are based on current expectations that are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially from expectation. Results are outlined in the risk factors section of our SEC filings. Any forward-looking statements should be considered in light of these factors. Please note, as a safe harbor, any outlook we present is as of today, and management does not undertake any obligation to revise any forward-looking statements in the future. With me on the call today are Mr. Derek Peterson, Terratech's Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Mike James, Chief Financial Officer. With that, I would now like to hand it over to Derek. Derek, go ahead.
Phil, thank you very much for the introduction. I appreciate that. Everybody, thank you for taking the time today to discuss with us Terratech's year-end 2016 results. And at the same time, as usual, we want to provide an operational and business update to all of our shareholders and listeners. Couple things here before we get into it. I first wanted to apologize to everybody for having to reschedule the call for a day. Just some last-minute tightening up of the admin in terms of getting filed. And also just wanted to give everybody a little bit of perspective. This was a pretty challenging year for us. Because of our growth rate, we hit a sizable market cap by mid-year, which put us into a category of what they call an accelerated filer, which shortened our filing deadlines quite drastically. In addition to that, of course, as everybody knows, we had the merger earlier in the year, and we had the audit associated with that, and as well as the operational integration. We switched auditors from a boutique PCAOB firm up to MGO, and for those of you that aren't familiar with MGO, they're a very well-regarded auditing firm in Northern California. They audit the state of California, the California Pension CalPERS Fund, a very high-grade auditing firm. So they took a learning curve for them to get, you know, used to us, you know, how we do things, and wrap their arms around an industry that's highly cash-based business, which was a bit of a learning curve. And in addition to that, we were subject to what they call an ICFR audit, which is an internal controls audit. So it was a pretty amazing year that we were able to do what we have done operationally from a growth perspective, but at the same time, you know, not only manage the compliance and legislative issues that we do operating in the medical cannabis field, but layered on top of that, all these additional hurdles that we had was pretty significant from an operational standpoint. Bringing me to just taking a moment, I wanted to thank, obviously, the board of directors. I wanted to thank the operating team, most specifically the audit team. I want to thank Stacy and Sabas and Asia that worked very hard on this, as well as our CFO, Mike James. There's a lot of late nights, overnighters that we had to pull to get this done, and of course, wanted to thank MGO for really taking the time to understand the cannabis industry and opening up their market. It's hard to find service providers in our space, and to find somebody that caliber that was willing to do business with us was a huge leg up, so we're very excited about that. Jumping into a little bit of the operations, I know we just put the press release out, and the Edgar filing with the SEC should be up on their site now. We had record Q4 revenue of $7.13 million, which was an increase of approximately 229% as compared to the same quarter last year. Full-year revenues reached a record $25.3 million, up 154% year-over-year as we saw the impact of our growth strategies take hold. We put out a forecast of $20 to $22 million, again, came in over $25. Significant increase of revenue. We beat the low end of our guidance, again, by 25%. Our business has been ramping nicely throughout the year, you know, considering the headwinds that we always kind of receive politically, as you see by the increased revenue number. The progress primarily has been driven by both the cannabis and as well as the growth in the organic produce segment, which we'll chat about as we get further into the call, which we expected to drive revenue in 2017, of course, and beyond from there. 2016 for us was a watershed year for the U.S. cannabis industry in general. More than half of the states in the U.S. now have comprehensive medical cannabis laws, and 8 states as well as D.C. have legalized recreational cannabis in some form. Most of our shareholders do a great job of paying attention to public opinion. As you're seeing, we're seeing overwhelming support from illegal and regulated cannabis markets. We're seeing bipartisan support from a legislative, and we're seeing a tremendous amount of bills that are in play at a federal level right now to streamline our industry. California and Nevada became recreational states following the 2016 election, which is significant for us. You know, California alone triples the size of the recreational cannabis market in the United States. In Nevada, for those that haven't been paying attention, steps are being made to have recreational go legal by the second half of this year. So they're shooting for July 1st in Nevada. The passing of recreational cannabis in these states has aligned us to have the first mover advantage in there, which we obviously plan to capitalize on very aggressively to expand our footprint in both markets. We're confident that the 2016 progress has positioned TerraTech as a market leader in the as a cannabis company, paving the way for strong growth in the business for 2017 and beyond. One highlight that I wanted to pay special attention to, we can talk about numbers and growth rates and those types of things all day, but it's we've had this company, again, started back in 2010. We took it public in 2012, and we finally got our going concern released from our audit. So we're no longer a going concern. For those of you who don't understand what that is, it's, in my opinion, perhaps one of the best indicators of significant progress that we've made over the past year. Our auditors essentially concluded that even in this uncertain environment, we have the current resources to support our operations as well as the growth plan over the next year. For our shareholders, this means that we have built a solid self-sustaining base for future growth. So let me really kind of dig into the call at this point by giving a high-level overview of the growth strategy in the cannabis business. For those that are new shareholders that may not have had listened to a prior K or seen one of our conferences or those types of things, our strategy is pretty simple. We want to own the cannabis vertical in the most high-impact markets that we can get involved with. We want to establish ourselves as leaders at every stage of the cannabis life cycle. We understand that it's an ambitious plan, but we believe that it's going to maximize the potential upside for our shareholders over the long haul. We started by targeting markets that we believe have the biggest value to us. Obviously, California, you know, for those of you that aren't aware, in 2016, it basically surpassed France to become the sixth largest economy in the world. In Nevada, which is really one of the few states that allows marijuana facilities to be for-profit and allows out-of-state cardholders with multi-state reciprocity to purchase from Nevada dispensaries. And that market really is in its beginning stage of its growth curve, and so much of the industry there is still embedded in the black market and now beginning to migrate over to the regulated market. The decision to focus on those states, as I said in the past, is now, in our opinion, been validated by the passing of recreational cannabis in 2016. But what does that mean for us? IVX, being one of our wholesale brand of cannabis, IVXX, is going to be one of our main drivers. We've really built that brand to be a lifestyle type of a brand with the look and feel that it has, and we wanted it to basically position for the recreational adult use market over the long haul. While we continue to make a name for ourselves in the medical cannabis market, we now have a significantly larger potential customer base in both markets when it comes to adult use. We anticipate recreational revenues to start in California in the first part of 2018, and as I said earlier, in Nevada in the second half of 2017. Combined with the recreational initiative in 2018 and the implementation of that new regulation, California is also switching to a for-profit state. So we made early moves partly because of bandwidth. We didn't want to jump out to a lot of other states. We made the decision to stay embedded in the California market, obviously, because of the size and scope. But we believed with the 45, 50 million visitors that come into the Nevada marketplace on an annual basis, plus Nevada is very well known for its ability to regulate businesses, we thought it was going to be a great market. So now with the passage of recreational and now that the legislature in the Carson City is essentially trying to fast-track the initiative to summertime, it was obviously a right call from a historical standpoint. So looking at 2017, we think we're pretty well positioned, obviously, being in both the California and Nevada markets, and the progress that we've made there on the medical side, now launching cultivation and branding on the IVX brand, push the retail sales through 2017 and on. And let's chat a little bit about cultivation. I want to take everybody through the business segments that we have. So everybody knows we have cultivation projects in Nevada and California. The cultivation facilities are basically growing our proprietary brand of our IVX proprietary strains. From there, the flowers either make it to retail sale or they make it to our laboratories, which were then converted to our IVX brand of concentrates, which range from everything from waxes to shatters to pre-filled cartridges. We're ultimately trying to scale our cultivation to a capacity where it can support the growth of the IVX brand in whole in both marketplaces. Let me take you through kind of each one of the cultivation projects that we have going, and we want to talk about some of the things that we have taking place from a strategic standpoint and some of the pivots that we've made considering the current administration. Southern Nevada, which is the Las Vegas area, currently we're working with the legislators there to analyze and craft the recreational regulations, ensuring that our facility will also be compliant to increase the market demand. We're still working with Clark County to receive final approvals for our building permits. However, we've They have another option, which we didn't have earlier in the game. And I think part of that has been administration-driven, some concern over the broader federal government involvement and that type of thing. But we're actually seeing up-and-running facilities that are cash-flowing, that are producing revenue, that the CapEx has always been put already been put into as a potential acquisition target. So while we're going, continuing to go down the road of building out our own facilities, we've been actually held up from that process a little bit on the building side from Clark County in terms of building permits as well as, you know, environmental studies and those types of things. But it was perfect for us because with the uncertainty of the administration, we were able to kind of scale back if we needed to, if they weren't going to allow recreational to move forward. But it gave us the ability to be adaptive to whatever the current economic or current legislative environment looked like. So now we potentially have up and running facilities that are on the table that we're in talks in terms of negotiations with a handful of different people. We'll keep people apprised as we make a decision there. Of course, you know, now that we see the recreational potentially being at full bore, our preference is to go the direction of seeing if we can find an acquisition for a facility that's already up and running. Northern Nevada, we've been in long talks with not only the people that make up the tenant base in the area around us, but also with the with Carson City, the state, and with the local community, Washoe County. We've wanted to build a greenhouse, and one of the things the legislation in Nevada didn't necessarily overtly provide was an opportunity to go the greenhouse route. As a matter of fact, there was a lot of concern from the legislators and the regulators that that we wouldn't be able to provide a safe and secure location with glass sides. Working, you know, obviously we have a tremendous amount of greenhouse operating experience, so we've been working with both the local community as well as the state as well as the as well as Washoe County in terms of educating them about the benefits associated with that lower carbon footprint, those types of things, with getting a greenhouse facility to produce our cannabis. We've made a tremendous amount of traction there, but we're not going to go the direction of building an indoor facility there. We're looking at the longer game here. We know over time margins have the potential to contract. We've seen it in other marketplaces. The cost of production in a greenhouse is about half, if not more, than what it is in an indoor facility because of the lack of necessity for artificial light on the basis that an indoor facility would have. So we may potentially pivot towards that. It's looking very favorable for us, and of course we'll update investors and shareholders as we make affirmative and material decisions. Our goal and objective is to have a large scale indoor facility in the state, coupled with a greenhouse facility, which gives us lower cost of goods. It gives us a better kind of resale story, too, from a retail standpoint, where we can actually market product that's low carbon footprint, that's sustainable, more healthy for the environment and that type of thing. And we think there's going to be a demand, just like we see on the produce side. We recently announced that we are doing another indoor cultivation project in Hagenberger up in Northern California. We're finalizing the design phase with our engineering consultants and working with the city to help and develop and ensure compliance with the new stringent fire codes and implementing a state-of-the-art energy-efficient HVAC system. Upon receipt of the building permit, we anticipate construction to last about 4 months. We finished demo already. Upon final approval from the city, we anticipate commencing operations immediately out of that location. The 200 light plus facility, we estimated to produce about a metric ton of cannabis by 2018. San Leandro. San Leandro, as everybody knows, is a retail facility but also has an associated lab that we're allowed to build there. We're working with the city planners on our CUP, which is a conditional use permit application, and finalizing our design with their input before submitting the building permits. Upon the receipt of the building permits, we anticipate about a 9-week construction schedule. We've already finished demolition on that site, and it's ready to be built out. Upon final approval from the city, we anticipate commencing dispensary operations immediately. The lab and permitting, we're bifurcating that application process and that building process because we knew the lab is likely going to take more time to get done, and we didn't want that to hold up the retail sales. So we made a decision to separate out that permitting process. That way we can open up the retail operations and get those up and operating as quickly as possible. Away from the cultivation, over to the wholesale brand, the next leg of the cultivation life cycle. Talking about Ivex, as most of you know, we've been selling Ivex for a little over a year at this point. We sell Ivex not only through our Bloom-branded dispensary, but also through our distribution network of medical cannabis dispensaries throughout California. We've also found a producer that we're doing co-branding within the Nevada marketplace to make sure we can get embedded brand recognition throughout the Nevada marketplace. We said at the start of the year that in 2016 we plan to expand our distribution in Ivex. We have. We've also just increased our products that we're distributing from waxes and shatters and those types of concentrates to a full line of pre-filled cartridge pens, vaporizing cartridges. We have a gold label and a silver label. We'll be launching a CBD line and a one-to-one, which is an equal parts THC and an equal parts CBD line. We think as smoking is getting more and more challenging to do in most demographics around the country, we see more and more people migrating to not only concentrates, but specifically items that are easy and convenient to travel with, to take around with you, and that is the vaporizing cartridges. We think that's going to be our largest segment on a go-forward basis. Because of that, and because of the recreational initiatives in both California and the Nevada marketplace, we're going to put a tremendous amount of energy now that we have our infrastructure in place and our product line broadened out to make sure we have a successful and aggressive marketing and advertising push in both the Nevada marketplace as well as the California marketplace to really embed that brand and in the consumer's culture. Lastly, an update on our strategy to open retail dispensaries, which has been a pretty great success for us so far. If you think about the first part of 2016, we began to establish a retail presence. We started the year with zero retail dispensaries, and now we have four medical dispensaries that are fully operational in Nevada. We have one medical dispensary that's fully operational in Oakland, and now we have a sixth one that's under construction in San Leandro. So we've been able to essentially put five operational facilities and one that's going to be operational here mid-year under the TerraTech umbrella in a very short period of time. Blue Stores, as most know, only sell the highest quality cannabis products, free of toxic pesticides, harmful molds, and chemical residues. And we're really pleased with the traction that we're seeing at all of our dispensaries. Besides Oakland, Reno has actually become our best performing dispensary. We ultimately think that will change and pivot as recreational sales take place and as the Las Vegas marketplace really starts to ramp up production. And for the new shareholders and for new people that are listening to the call, we have this strip of Las Vegas very well surrounded. We have north, south, and both sides of the strip. All of our dispensaries are just a few-minute drive from the strip. One of them is very conveniently located against the convention center, which obviously is a huge traffic driver in terms of tourism into the state. We're going to make sure that we aggressively market and advertise. That way we can monetize that to the best way that we can. And we've built those dispensaries out with multiple windows to meet the scale that we thought we would have with recreational demand. So in the fourth quarter of 2016, TerraTech, we also, again, as I said, we're granted a license in San Leandro. We're going to get that one up and operating as soon as possible, and we think that's going to be a great location for us. There's not many licensed dispensaries between Oakland and San Jose. San Leandro is right in the middle. Our location there is right off the freeway and very accessible with great parking, so we're very excited about launching that mid-year, and we think that's going to be a very accretive spot for us. On a go-forward basis, we're continuing to look for M&A targets to continue to grow. I've talked about in the past, we have a long game and a short game. The long game is going after organic permits, which we know takes a year to a year and a half. Then it takes another year for CapEx to build them out. But the cost of entry is a lot more affordable than having to go through an M&A. But we want to balance that long-term game with a short-term model of M&A, like we successfully were able to accomplish with the acquisition last year with Bloom Oakland. So we're going to be looking to acquire additional retail dispensaries throughout California, Los Angeles markets, and San Diego's being our primary motivation from here going forward. Moving on to operational achievements made at our Edible Garden Farm in New Jersey, we've increased the number of Edible Garden retailers to 1,900 on December 31st, 2016, from 1,800 a year ago. In the fourth quarter, Edible Garden added two new contract farmers to its cooperative of local growers of fresh and local produce. This brings the company's national contract farmer count to eight, compared to a six at December 13 of 2015. In Q4, Edible Garden installed an additional acre of its hydroponic Dutch movable table systems. This move toward automation is expected to lead and increase productivity and gross margins at Edible Garden in 2017. We've expanded our product line to include the Superleaf nutritionally enhanced lettuce variety developed in conjunction with Rutgers University. That's been a great market entry point. It's something different than everybody else has. You know, it's one thing to show up at a new retailer and say, hey, I have basil. It's a whole other thing to say I have a patented piece of produce that has, you know, significant higher nutrient density and antioxidant density than our competitors out there. So we've been getting great results with that. We're really looking to that to be our market entry in other markets throughout the United States, as well as our potted living herbs. In addition, as some of you know, we acquired a vitamin line and a dietary supplement line aimed at the healthy living market. That market segment did about $1.3 million in sales for us last year, and we're excited about continuing to grow the Vitamin Whey as well as the Bikini Ready and other brands under that umbrella. Edible Garden's also developing into what I believe is a credible and respected supplier of organic and natural produce. Remember, we really built this division out a long time ago as a hedge, not understanding what the legislative and political environment was going to be. And now it's not only been very complementary to us on the cannabis side from a technology standpoint, but the brand is really starting to get some significant legs in and of itself. So we're very, very focused on expanding that model throughout the United States this year so that we're populating specifically the West Coast and markets, you know, even east of there, like Colorado and that type of thing. We've got, you know, all the certifications, USDA organic, we're GFSI certified, non-GMO, kosher. We put a tremendous amount of effort and energy in streamlining our operations and automating our facilities to expand our margins on that side. We participate in all the major produce shows. We were in the New York Produce Show in December. We've had great feedback on our products from there. And we have a great sales force and team out there in the marketplace trying to continue to grow that. In 2017, we've decided to expand the Edible Garden footprint to add a pack house back there, to basically streamline logistics efficiencies with the trucks coming in and out, to broaden our product line, and to automate the final fifth acre of production in that facility. What the pack house allows us to do is enter the cut produce market, the cut herbs, the cut lettuces, the bagged lettuces, which is a huge market segment, and we want to make sure we have the Edible Garden brand in the store aisles with those items as well. In addition to that, we found, you know, there's a couple of different ways we distribute produce out there in the industry. We go through distribution hubs, and those distribution hubs then deliver out to the retailer. We also deliver what they call store-door delivery, which is through our own trucking systems we deliver to the individual stores themselves. What we're finding when we deliver to the individual stores themselves, not only is the product handled better, merchandised better, it lasts longer, but we get a higher revenue item and a higher measure of profitability from doing that. So we're really using the packing house to increase those efficiencies so we can broaden out our store-door delivery model for Edible Garden. At this point, I'll turn the call over to Mike James, TerraTech's Chief Financial Officer, to go over the financials in more detail.
Thank you, Derek. Good afternoon, everyone. I'll now provide you with a summary of our year-end 2016 results. For the more detailed results, please refer to the press release we issued earlier today, which is posted on our website, along with the Form 10-K filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission. In addition, please note that we compile our financials under U.S. GAAP, including our non-operating expenses. Consolidated revenue for the full year 2016 increased to $25.3 million, a 153.9% increase compared to $9.98 million a year ago. The increase was primarily due to the revenue generated by Black Oak and Ibex from the sales of its cannabis products and revenue generated by Edible Garden from the sales of its produce, herbs, and floral products. Revenue for the fourth quarter ended December 31st, 2016, was $7.13 million, a 229% increase compared to $2.17 million a year ago. A gross margin for the year ended December 31st, 2016, was relatively flat with a prior year of 10.2%. SG&A expenses for the year ended December 31st, 2016, totaled $20.7 million compared to $9.8 million in 2015. The increase was primarily due to an increase of approximately $4.6 million in compensation expense during the year ended December 31st, 2016, compared to the prior year, due to the acquisition of Black Oak, the opening of additional dispensaries, and higher employee stock compensation expense. An increase of approximately $2.86 million for consulting services in connection with the opening of additional dispensaries and other fees. Year-end net loss was $26.9 million, or a loss of 7 cents per basic and diluted share, compared to a loss of $9.2 million, a loss of 4 cents per basic and diluted share in the year ended 2015. The primary reasons for the increase in the net loss is an increase in selling, general, and administrative expenses from the opening of additional dispensaries, an increase in the amortization of debt discount, and an increase in the loss on the extinguishment of debt. An increase in the loss on the fair market valuation of derivatives in the year ended December 31st, 2016. Now turning to the balance sheet, our cash balance at the end of the quarter stood at $9.7 million, compared to approximately $418,000 as of December 31st, 2015. Short-term debt as of December 31st, 2016 amounted to approximately $564,000 compared to approximately $917,000 as of December 31st, 2015. We also secured $1.3 million in long-term debt to support the growth of the business. Stockholders' equity at December 31st, 2016 amounted to $52.2 million, an increase of approximately $45.8 million compared to $6.3 million as of December 31st, 2015. Revenue guidance for the full year 2017 is $38 to $40 million. The predicted increase in year-over-year revenue is expected to be driven largely by the sales of the company's dispensaries in California and Nevada, as well as continued growth of the Ibex brand throughout the California and Nevada markets. Now, I'd like to turn the call back over to Derek for some closing comments.
Mike, thank you for taking that part. Just in summary, want to run over a few things that I'm particularly very satisfied and happy with over last year, and talk about again a little bit of the things that we're focusing on coming into 2017, which we're obviously well into at this point. As Mike said, I'm thrilled. We've taken the balance sheet from $6 million in stockholders' equity from 15 to 16 up to over $50 million in stockholders' equity. That is sizable for us, and we're very thrilled to continue to beef up the asset base of TerraTech. Not to reiterate it again, but at the beginning of the call, we talked about no longer being a going concern, huge milestone for us. We're thrilled that our team was able to achieve that. We're thrilled that our capital partners have been able to come to the table with affordable financing for us to execute on our business model. One of the things we're focused on in the coming year is margin expansion. That's a huge issue for us, and we're trying to see continued margin improvement, which is why we're working, you know, with 280E. We've got a couple federal bills in there that are focusing on 280E, which we can then potentially mitigate some of the cost of goods on the cannabis side. We're coming into a for-profit model here in the state of California here shortly, which we're thrilled about. And we're going to be taking a hard look at a lot of our business segments. One of the places we're scaling back is the flower business that we do. When I say flower, I'm not talking cannabis flower. I'm talking the ornamental flowers. At first, we continued to distribute those to a lot of the retailers that we did business with, the ShopRites of the world and that type of thing, because we were concerned they wouldn't do business on the produce side with us unless we were furnishing them with the flower business. The problem with the flower business is it's extremely, extremely low margin, and blended out, it doesn't look very well on our edible garden side. So we've made the internal decision at the cost of some revenue we're getting and migrating out of that business segment, just because there's just no need for it. The edible garden produce brand stands on its own at this point. We've had great sell-through rates, great consumer receptance. The stores have been very pleased with our ability to fulfill on a continual basis high-quality product. So that being said, we're going to cost ourselves, you know, a few million dollars, several million dollars in revenue, but that's not reflected in the targets that we put out there. So the targets that we put out there of 38 to 40 million in revenue are taking into consideration the reduction on the flower business, but we should see significant margin increase based on that. As some of you know, we're the only national fully vertically integrated public company in the United States operating in every stage of the cannabis life cycle. There aren't many alternatives for people that are looking to get invested into a company that touches the plant. We believe this over the long haul is going to give us several advantages over the competition, including improved quality control of our product, better cost management, margin expansion, and product integrity. We're seeing a lot of headline risk for pesticides and those types of things in the Canadian market. We've seen it in the United States. It's hard to manage that reputational risk when you're taking product from a lot of other people and relying wholeheartedly on third-party testing agencies. So having the ability to be vertically integrated is going to give us a better opportunity to control the quality of product coming out on the other end. We're excited about the opportunities we see in the marketplace in 2017. As the market evolves, the total addressable market for medical cannabis we think is going to increase this year, as well as the additional recreational adult use. Again, the guidance for 2017 is a range of about $38 to $40 million in top-line revenue. As a result of our initiatives in 2016, we're continuing to build our brand and expand our footprint in medical cannabis arena in both California and Nevada, primarily positioning ourselves to capture as much market share in those markets as absolutely possible. And the only way that we know to do that is branding integrity and branding strength. Branding on the consumer side from a retail perspective with our Bloom retail dispensaries, and branding on the wholesale side with the Ibex brand of high-quality concentrates and vaporizing lines. So that's our primary focus. We're trying to do everything in our power to make certain, however the market shapes up in the future, that we're not considered or put into the corner as a commodity provider, but that we have brand strength and we have brand integrity and brand penetration primarily over anything else. Again, I want to thank everybody for this exciting period in TerraTech's growth. I want to thank our shareholders. We have some of the best shareholders. We get a lot of emails, a lot of comments and a lot of messages. We've had a lot of people that have been with us for years and years and years, and we've taken the company from just a few $100,000 in sales to this year to over $25 million, and we're very excited about 2017. Regardless of the political landscape, we are pushing forward according to what our business model was just a year ago. Again, wanted to thank MGO, our auditors, our board of directors, our operating team, our financiers, specifically our auditing team, Asia, Stacy, Sabas, Mike James, to name a few people. This, was a very challenging year for you, for us. We're very excited about 2017. We look forward to quarterly updates. And I'd like to take a minute, Phil, I know you probably have some questions that came in. I'd like to take a minute now and answer some of those questions that people took the time to email in over the past few days.
Yep. Okay, first question, can management comment on the recent noise from Washington, D.C. surrounding cannabis?
There's a tremendous amount of conversation in the industry around this right now. What I am thrilled about is the amount of support that has come out for our industry when some of the negative comments were made from the Department of Justice, and that type of thing. So we really had a chance to see what the bipartisan support looked like. We had a ton of Republican legislators that stepped up in support of the industry. And again, there are people that are supporting this space, not because they necessarily care about cannabis, but, you know, the libertarian-minded representatives like Rand Paul and Dana Rohrabacher, who's here in our district, have really put themselves out there to support states' rights and the ability for states to make rules and regulations. We think there's going to be a lot of chatter. We think it's going to be, you know, a bit of a challenging environment, but nowhere near what it's been in the past. We're used to operating in an environment like that. But we are now seeing support that we didn't understand the breadth of it. And that's, I think, one of the reasons we're seeing a response in Congress. With the Obama administration and their kind of lackadaisical approach to the industry, there really wasn't a necessity for Congress to take action. You know, if they get aggressive at a federal level, we might see that there's, you know, an impetus for them to get moving and pass some sort of a legislative move, whether it's a descheduling or what have you. But we believe this will ultimately be some semblance of a catalyst to have additional forward momentum. I think people are beginning to understand there's constituent and voting risk not supporting this industry, specifically on the medical side. And I think it's going to be very challenging if they try to take a different approach from a states' rights standpoint for medical and then bifurcate out states' rights for adult use and recreational. Could they make it more challenging? Could they put caps and curbs? Absolutely. Those things could come to fruition. But listen, we already operate in a tremendously regulated environment in the states that we work in. California's got major legislation coming down the pipeline. Nevada has obviously very well thought out legislation and regulations that we've learned how to adapt to. So we're not afraid of that. And again, I've said to people a ton of times over this last several years, this dichotomy between state and federal laws, challenging as it is operationally, again, has given us an incubated environment to grow our businesses. If this weren't the situation, we'd very likely wake up, and I don't know if it's, you know, big pharma, big alcohol, big tobacco, you name it, larger scale, well-capitalized companies would be rolling in and taking market share. This environment gives us the ability to build out our brands, to get those embedded, entrench ourselves, and that's a defensive mechanism. It gives us options downstream where we could either be an acquisition target, we could be a standalone. At the end of the day, like I said, you know, the fact that we have options is kind of the positive benefit of having that dichotomy between state and federal laws.
Okay. Second question. Has TerraTech been taking steps to grow an online and delivery-based portion of their business to meet that demand?
Whoever asked that.
Recreational. In regards to recreational.
Okay, yeah. In all aspects. I mean, listen, that's a great question. And, you know, whoever's thinking about that question or wrote that question is pretty forward-thinking. But yeah, I think, you know, everybody's getting used to app-based shopping. I use a lot of different applications to order things, you know, for my home, for food, and those types of things we do here at the office now. So I don't think cannabis over the long haul is necessarily going to be anything different. So we're absolutely focused on, over the long term, of making sure we can compete from a delivery standpoint, from a technological standpoint, in both markets, you know, right now that we're currently involved with. So that's absolutely something that's on our front burner, it's on our focus. We know to be competitive over the long haul, we're going to have exposure to that space. You know, right now, our primary motivation is to continue to expand our brick-and-mortar footprint, continue to expand our cultivation footprint to support that brick-and-mortar retail, but at the same time making certain that we're focusing on building a technological backbone as well as brand recognition such that we can drive additional consumer demand through those mediums.
Okay. With the cannabis market ramping up, what is your strategy to stay on top of the market without advancing too far too fast?
Branding, 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 branding. I mean, it really goes back to that. And expanding too fast, that's always a fine balance, right? I mean, we certainly get pressure and we certainly get questions and calls and commentary about when are you going to stop trying to grow and lean everything out and turn a profit. And while that is a focus of ours, our focus for the next, year or two is certainly grabbing market share primarily. We want to grab market share from a retail perspective, from a cultivation and wholesale perspective. And again, we want to do that through our strong branding mechanism and aligning our brand more along the lines of a lifestyle type of an experience as well. So that's how we think we're competitive over the long haul. If us not being ultra aggressive is not going into too many other markets, and we're not jumping into Washington, we're not in Massachusetts right now, we're not in some of these other areas because we have tremendous amount of opportunity in our backyard. For us, from a bandwidth standpoint, to jump into another market, there's no sense in doing it. If we were maxed out in the markets here, that would be another thing. But we're going to continue to focus on the markets that we're in. If some other market that looks extremely attractive comes to fruition, we're certainly going to take a hard look at it. But we always look resources first. And we figure if we can execute well on the West Coast, develop the brand recognition we think we're capable of developing, we can push that brand model out through the rest of the country relatively easy. Through licensing agreements, franchise models, however it happens to be, or just, owning everything ourselves, we have some flexibility.
Okay. Having passed legislation for legal marijuana in the states of California and Nevada, is the company willing to open up to this market or simply stay within the medical cannabis sector? And do you plan to have your strains sold in rec shops, if so?
Yeah, we are pushing forward on recreational sales in both markets. We're not, until we see something, directly prohibitive coming out of the federal government, which we don't think is going to be the case, we're going to continue to push forward and build our model out, not only in the medical side, but on the adult use and recreational side. And we think that's going to be, a significant catalyst, an unexpected catalyst for us in Nevada coming into the second half of the year. Again, we thought that was going to be a first part of 2018 play, but Nevada, which excels at regulation, has done a phenomenal job of putting together with Senator Tick Siegerbloom a fast-track program for us that we think is going to have a high probability of coming to fruition. So we're going to full bore into the adult-use market, make sure we maintain our base on the medical side and continue to build and develop brands for both markets.
Okay. Can you comment on possible expansion for TerraTech? What states do you view as the next ones you would like to move into outside of California and Nevada?
Yeah, we want to, Phil, we want to crush it in California and Nevada right now. That's what's on our purview right now. Again, to jump into another marketplace right now is going to be, new lobbyists, new attorneys, new compliance teams, new operating teams, new CapEx, all those types of things. We're trying to build economies of scale in the markets that we're currently working in. And that's one of the headwinds, and I've talked about that in the past, is, we're not like other businesses. In another business, I would open up a factory in Texas or wherever, I would produce my products and I would distribute those throughout the United States in whatever manner, provided me the best set of economics. And in this industry, because the state rules and regulations are so different, we've got to adapt in different ways in different markets that we operate in. So little things like packaging design, font sizes, ability to market and advertise in certain ways, they differ in multiple marketplaces. So we want to make sure that at the very minimum in the current markets that we're working in, we can develop economies of scale. And the only way we do that is by getting continued saturation and growth in those markets. So until those markets from our purview become ultimately filled, we're not really going to be looking into other markets across the United States unless there's a piece of legislation out in a marketplace that looks very, very compelling to us. We'll certainly sit and reevaluate that. But at the very, as we sit right now, all things remaining equal, we really want to execute in Nevada. We really want to execute in California. We think we can build a very sizable company just in those two markets in and of themselves, leverage our success in those markets, and then expand into follow-on markets after.
Okay. Will you franchise out Bloom locations in the future, or will they all be company-owned?
You know, I think everything's on the table right now. I mean, it's a changing legislative environment. So, you know, there might be areas that we're not able to operate in because of, you know, residency requirements, like in Colorado and things like that. So, you know, we are certainly have an eye towards licensing and franchising if we decide to go that direction. We also understand the potential impacts to your brand by doing that, right? You lose a little bit of control. So, I mean, there is a preference to have everything corporate owned, but that being said, we're certainly have an eye towards using that as a catalyst for broader and further growth.
Okay, last question. Will TerraTech's percentage ownership of 60, 50, and 55% respectfully change in the future in all three of the MediPharm Nevada subdivisions?
Okay, that's a great question. It's actually, I mean, it's a relatively complex question, but the short of it is this. Our Reno dispensary is a true 50-50 partnership. We get 100% of the revenue. We owe 50% essentially of the profits to our partner up there. The other locations, according to the operating agreements, we basically have the right to 100% of the revenue and 100% of the profits. As the majority interest holder of those subsidiaries, we have a right to buy out the membership interest of the other holders at a value associated with our capital accounts. And what that means in English is right now, because we've spent a tremendous amount of money in Nevada, sales are just starting to ramp up. We have a historical expense in the state that hasn't been made up yet by net income. We think that'll obviously be fixed as time goes on with the implementation of recreational cannabis. But what that does is it allows us to buy out the membership interest of our partners for basically a zero value. So one of the reasons we wanted to keep those partnerships in place was because of the local ownership regard that the local community had. But we've built enough credibility with the local governments, the state. We're a Nevada corporation ourselves. There's just no continued value add to have the partnership like that. So something that we're working on is to assume 100% of those entities. It's not going to cost us any capital to do that, according to the operating agreement that we put forth. And that being said, like I said, that's something that we're going to be executed, I think, on, you know, over the next quarter or two, just to clean up the accounting associated with that. So those ones, with the exception of the Reno dispensary, will be 100% owned by the company. But as we sit right now, we're entitled to 100% of the revenue and 100% of the profits that come out of that entity.
Okay. That's it.
That's it. All right. Yep. Well, again, Phil, thank you. Thank you for putting the call together. Stuart, Small Cap Voice, thanks for arranging the technical backbone for us. And most importantly, again, shareholders, I think there's a few hundred people on the phone at this point, and there always is for every one of these calls. Thank you again for the trust that you've put into our operating team. We've grown this company from a handful of employees to about 200, from a $500,000 in revenue in 2012 up to over 25 last year, and we're really excited about our future. It's not going to be easy, but we said to everybody we're in this for the long haul, but we are finally feeling some tailwinds in the industry that we haven't felt in the past, regardless of the kind of federal government issues from an operational standpoint. Consumers are beginning to become more and more interested in our products, from a social aspect as well as from a medical aspect, and we're really excited about our positioning in what we think are two very viable markets on a go-forward basis. So, again, thank you, everybody, for taking some time out of your day. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you next quarter.